afternoon in the desert regions of Arizona. A young boy was climbing and hiking over the rocky terrain. He would scramble up the large slabs of stone and he would jump over the cracks between the rocks. But at one point he encountered a rather intimidating crack. It was a little bit wide and he thought, should I jump this one? He said, today I can do this. Took a few steps back to get a running start. And with a huge effort and leap, he made it across. But as he landed, his feet hit some loose rock. And he slipped, fell right on his face, slid down the rock into the crack. Now he panicked. With his arms and legs, he was flailing, doing everything he could to try to get out. But as he struggled, he slipped further and deeper into the crack. Pretty soon, he was so far down that his legs, his arms were trapped and he couldn't move. He got so far down that even as his lungs deflated so that he could get another breath, he would slip further down and further down. Soon, he could barely even take a breath to breathe. Hopelessness, fear, what could he have been feeling? And there he waited. The hot sun kept getting hotter, and he waited. Now his parents finally realized, our boy is gone. He's been gone for a while. They went out and they found him. They got a rescue team out there, and they had a time trying to figure out how to get him out of there, because they couldn't pull him out without hurting him. And they deliberated and deliberated. The day wore on, and finally, they concocted some kind of lubricant, poured it all over the boy and all over the rock. And they somehow carefully slipped him out of there without hurting the boy. But this story reminds me of experiences that I've had spiritually. Walking along in life, tripping, falling into a hole, and I struggle to get out. I panic, I evaluate, I analyze, I try to get a solution. But the harder I work, the harder I strive, the harder that I grow in my own strength, what happens? The deeper I fall. And I realize that someone has to come from above and reach down where I am in my trouble and pull me out. And I felt the panic, the fear, am I going to get out of here? Now we face all sorts of trouble. You may have financial trouble. Someone's sick in the family. The bills are beyond comprehension. And how are you going to provide? How are you going to get out of it? You may have family trouble, broken relationships, and stress. And it may even be your fault. How are we going to get out of this? You may have school problems. I have. There have been times I blew it on something and I think, man, have I messed up God's plan for my life? You may have ministry problems. You made a wrong move and some people in your church turn against you. Our lives are filled with these things. But God gives us hope, because God is willing to deliver us. And God is able to deliver us. In Psalm 91, which we already looked at, we see a beautiful expression of God's promise, the confidence that we can have in His deliverance. Now, if you notice, there seems to be a change in person. We get the sense that we're listening in on a conversation between two people. If you look in verse 2, he says, I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him I will trust. And then it seems that someone's listening to him, and he chimes in and says, surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. And then if you look in verse 9, the seeming conversation continues as one says to the other, because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you. And then at the end, in the last three verses, we have a very welcome interruption to the conversation. A third person enters the discussion, and it's God Himself. And He has something to say about delivering from trouble. In verse 14, the Lord speaks, "Because he has set his love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high, because he has known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation." God describes the type of person that he delivers from trouble. And today, God is ready to deliver us. The three characteristics here that the Lord gives of those who he has promised to deliver. We want to look at each of these three this morning and see who is God looking for that he might deliver them. The first is this: God will deliver those who set their love upon him. God will deliver those who set their love upon him. You see this clearly in verse 14. Again, it says, "Because he has set his love upon me, therefore I will deliver him." And you can make no mistake between these words, "because" and "therefore," that God is responding to the action, to the attitude of a man. He is responding to the condition of the man who has set his love upon him. And we see a great deal of insight as we look at this word love and what it means. It contains the idea of cleaving. It contains the idea of clinging to, being attached to and devoted. Now, when we say that we're going to set our love upon God, we're saying that our longing, our deepest desire, is to be near him, is to cling to him and hold on to him. When we say that we set our love upon God, we're saying that we are not going to allow anything to come between us. It was just a children's movie, but any adults who watched it saw the great themes rising from it. There was a small lion cub. But he wasn't just any lion cub. He was the cub of the chief of the pride. He was the cub of the king of the jungle. And his father took him around the kingdom and showed him. And he said, "Over here is the forbidden land." And he said, "Son, do not go in the forbidden land." But of course, what happens? Young cub, prone to wander and explore, enters into the forbidden land. And there he faces the enemy. Three disgusting hyenas. And they're going to eat him. They're going to kill him and eat him. And so the chase begins. Now the little cub, of course, he doesn't have the strength to outrun. And he begins to realize this. And he says, "But you know what? I'm not going down without a fight." So he turns around, musters up all his courage, and says, "I'm going to give these guys a roar and at least see what happens." Takes a big breath and opens his mouth. And to his surprise, a great roar comes forth. He looks at the enemy, and they seem quite surprised too. Their eyes are huge, they come to a stop, and they turn and run for their lives. The cub thinks, "Whoa, my goodness." And as he turns around, there is Dad, the king of the jungle. In the first verse of this chapter, it says, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." When we come into the presence of God, that's the secret place. We're so close to God that we're swallowed up by his shadow. And that's how we come in close to God. Now, what saved the cub from the enemy? He was in the shadow of the king. He was close. He was near. And when we say, "I want to set my love upon God," I long to be near him. I long to cling to him. He is my refuge. He is my fortress. And I don't want to let anything get in the way of being near him. I'm embarrassed to admit some of the things that I let get between me and God. Just if something doesn't go my way during the day, man, that just gets on my nerves, and there I am, not trusting God. My pride is puffed up. I fail. My pride is hurt. It comes between me and God. Selfishness. I just want to please myself. It comes between me and God. Sometimes we wander into the forbidden land, don't we? But the King, even now, is waiting and ready to receive us. And if we're there, if we're ever there, every moment that we find ourselves in the forbidden land, turn immediately and run to the King. And be sure that the enemy will follow you, snapping at your heels, trying to drag you back. But run hard. Run for the King. And what happens as you draw near to him, you fall under his shadow. And the enemy stop. They can go no further. They turn and run for their lives because you're in the presence of the King. God will deliver those who set their love upon him. The second truth we see here is that God will deliver those who know his name. In the second part of verse 14, it says, I will set him on high because he has known my name. Now we know when the Bible refers to the name of God, it is much more than a name, isn't it? It's a personal revelation. We understand who God is because of his name. And not only do we know it cognitively, we can know it experientially. We can know that God, through our experience, is who he says that he is. There's some great men, such as King David, Charles Spurgeon, and Martin Luther, who were prone to going into the pit of despondency, to depression, and they would get down, very down. On one occasion, Martin Luther was out on a long, lonely walk, and as he was returning to the home, his head down, his shoulders slumping, a look of defeat upon his face. He notices that the house is closed up. And this was the custom if someone was dead in the house. It was closed up as if there was someone who had died. He quickens his pace and comes to the house. He goes in and there's his wife, dressed in mourning clothes. And he says, what's happened? And solemnly and quietly, she answers, God is dead. This was her never-so-subtle way of letting him know that his behavior was not reflecting his theology. This is her way of knocking him out of his depression and saying, is there not a God? Is there not hope? As long as there's God, there's hope.
That's right.
Now, how do we know that there's hope? Well, let's look at his name and see. There are four names mentioned here in this text, Psalm 91, that help us to understand who he is. The first is in verse 1, the Most High. He is the one who transcends our troubles. He is above it. It does not influence him like it influences us. It says also in verse 1, he is the Almighty. Is there any trouble? Is there any problem that he cannot handle? It also says in verse 2 that he is the Lord. He is Jehovah. He is the one who has pledged himself to interfere for the good of his people. And he is also my God, as the psalmist declares. He's our personal God. We can experience in our lives what is true in his eternal character. And what does it say that the Lord will do to those who know his name? It says, I will set him on high. In the second part of verse 14, I will set him on high because he has known my name. And when the enemy presses in, where do we want to be? On higher ground. And when the floodwaters rise, where do we want to be? On higher ground. When our feet are stuck in the miry clay, where do we want to be? On higher ground. And when we need a new perspective on our life, where do we want to be? on higher ground. And we get this image of the Lord reaching down as we're overwhelmed by our sin, by our pain, by our sorrows, and taking us up, pulling us out, delivering us, and setting us high on a rock. And it's amazing from up here how things look. I see my problems. I thought they were a lot bigger than that, but there they are. My problems don't seem to touch me up here like they did down there. And why am I here? Because He is the Most High, the Almighty, Jehovah, my God. We have to remember when we face trouble who He is. When you feel like you're going to drown from the flood of pain and temptation, remember, He is the Most High, above the problems. When you feel like your burden is so heavy you can't take it one more step, remember, He is Almighty, and there's no burden that He cannot bear. When it seems like everyone has broken their promise, everyone has turned against you, remember, He is Jehovah, the promise maker and the promise keeper. And when you feel like you've lost everything that is precious to you, you still have God, my God, your God, the personal God. Amen. God will deliver those who know His name. We see then that God will deliver those who set their love upon Him. God will deliver those who know His name. And finally, we see that God will deliver those who call upon Him. We see this in the beginning of verse 15. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. Now this is the point that we realize that we're helpless in our weakness, but we must have help from outside of ourselves. And in prayer, we express our desperate need and our dependence upon Him. In prayer, we call out to Him for help. Professor Haddon Robinson told a story about a game that he would play with his children, Vicky and Tori, when they were young. He would take some coins in his hand, and he would show them to the children, and then close them up. Children would run and jump into his lap and try to pry his fingers open one by one to try to get those coins out. They would laugh. They would play. They had a great time. But finally, they would snatch their treasure and run off with delight. Now I wonder, was that cruel? I mean, if he wanted to give the children some money, I mean, couldn't if he had just given it to them? Why did he play the game? He loved to have the children up in his lap, didn't he? With his arms around them where he can hug them and love them, enjoy them, and laugh with them. And sometimes I wonder, you know, does God not see the trouble I'm in? Does He not know that I need Him? Why will He not simply come and rescue me? And here I wait. Because God knows that the blessings that He gives me, that the deliverance from these temporal circumstances, are not what I really need. What I really need is God Himself. My dad. And so He leaves them in His hand and He says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Come to me. We're going to face the troubles. But when you do, go to dad. Get up in his lap. Let him put his arms around you, comfort you, and love you. And just pour your heart out to him. Tell him. Tell him your pain. Tell him what's going on. Ask him to intervene for you. And there you'll find that he is what you really needed. God loves to deliver his people, those who set their love upon him, those who know his name, those who call upon him. But he is especially looking for those who do these things that he might deliver them. My dad introduced my wife and my little girl who's near here. She's 11 months old now. And sometimes I'll leave her in the nursery there at the church, and I'll come back to get her, and there are all those children. Sometimes it strikes me, I'm the pastor. I'm not just the pastor of all these adults here. I'm the pastor of these children. And I love all of them. But there's one little girl among all the children that I'm especially attentive to. There's one little girl who loves me. There's one little girl who knows my name, Daddy. And there's one little girl that calls on me when she needs help. And you parents understand your heart for your kids because of your special relationship to them. And God loves us all, doesn't he? Doesn't he want to deliver us all? But even now, he looks out on all of us who are here, and he looks for those who set their love upon him. Those who know his name, and those who call upon him. That's who he wants to deliver.